Morning, friends, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. And we just want to remind everyone that on Sundays and on Wednesdays, Theosophy Hall is open for in-person meetings, as well as we Zoom. For our Friday meetings continue to be 100% Zoom. And Zoom has been a very helpful technology for us since the pandemic started. We have been able to continue spread broadcasting these ideas, and we have made friends from all around the country and even around the world. So we are grateful for Zoom, and we do have certain protocol for Zoom. For our Zoom meetings, we just request that folks, when they're not speaking, to please keep their microphones on mute. And if you are on video and you need to get up and walk around, please make sure that you stop your video. It can be very distracting. And please continue to direct your questions and comments to the chairperson. And if you're referring to a comment, it is appropriate to just say one of the previous comments has been, rather than the person's initials. We do follow the declaration's ideas in regards to anonymity. And if you are coming into Theosophy Hall, we do request that you do not wear heavily scented colognes, soaps, perfume, those types of things. So we will now turn the meeting over to our chairperson for the declaration announcements and the program. Thank you.
We'll begin our meeting with a reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists and a presentation of the announcements.
Thank you. Good morning, beloved. The Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists is as follows. The policy of this lodge is independent.
Keep going.
The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in inside issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a true realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophists belongs to no cult or sect, yet to each and all. The announcement for today are as follows. The United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia hosts 3 weekly meetings. We have a meeting on Wednesday evening where there is a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy. This is a meeting that is held at the lodge and on Zoom, and as such is a hybrid meeting. It starts at 7:30 p.m. and it lasts until 8:45 p.m. Next Wednesday's meeting, February the 1st, 2023, is the class on reincarnation. Does lack of memory disprove? The lodge can open Wednesday evenings at 6:15 p.m. for use of the library until 7:15 p.m. This is a reference library, not a lending library. On Friday evenings, there is a Theosophy Roundtable meeting. This is a Zoom meeting that starts at 6:30 p.m. and lasts until 7:30 p.m. The article for discussion on February 3rd will be available later this week. On Sunday morning, such as this, there is a more formal presentation of the philosophy of Theosophy. This meeting starts promptly at 11 a.m. and lasts until 12 p.m. It is also a hybrid meeting that takes place simultaneously on Zoom and in person at the lodge in Philadelphia. The doors open at the lodge on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. For those attending the meeting at the lodge, please avoid using fragrant scents for the benefit of those who have sensitivities. The theme for the meeting during February is the care of the soul. The presentation next Sunday, February 5th, will be a panel on the healing power of meditation, followed by more time for questions, answers, and comments. This morning's talk is Aphorisms on Spiritual Progress. The book table at the lodge displays straight line theosophical literature in the form of books, magazines, and pamphlets available for purchase. The literature may be examined and purchased at the lodge before and after the meetings and during library hours. All the activities of the lodge are supported by voluntary contributions of time, money, and work. All contributions are appreciated and needed, but there is no obligation imposed or implied. All the activities of the lodge are supported by voluntary contributions of time, money, and work. All contributions are greatly appreciated and needed, but as stated before, there is no obligation imposed or implied. Those interested in more information on how to support the work of the Theosophical Movement may contact the lodge through the email address. In connection with today's talk, a reading has been selected from The Voice of Silence, which begins on page 6 and ends on page 8. Today's reading is as follows. Give up thy life if thou wouldst live. 3 halls, O weary pilgrim, lead to the end of toils. 3 halls, O conqueror of Mara, will bring thee through 3 states, into the 4th, and thence into the 7th worlds, the worlds of rest eternal. If thou wouldst learn their names, then hearken and remember. The name of the first hall is ignorance, avidya. It is the hall in which thou saw the light in which thou livest and shall die. The name of hall, the second, is the hall of learning. In it, thy soul will find the blossoms of life, but under every flower, a serpent coiled. The name of the third hall is Wisdom, beyond which stretch the shoreless waters of Akshara, the indestructible font of omniscience. If thou wouldst cross the first hall safely, let not thy mind mistake the fires of lust that burn therein for the sunlight of life. If thou wouldst cross the second safely, stop not the fragrance of its stupefying blossoms to inhale. If freed, thou wouldst be from the karmic chains. Seek not for thy guru in those Mayavic regions. The wise ones tarry not in pleasure grounds of senses. The wise ones heed not the sweet-tongued voices of illusion. Seek for him who is to give thee birth in the hall of wisdom, the hall which lies beyond, wherein all shadows are unknown, and where the light of truth shines with unfading glory. That which is uncreate abides in thee, disciple, as it abides in that hall. If thou wouldst reach it and blend the two, thou must divest thyself of thy dark garments of illusion. Stifle the voice of flesh. Allow no image of the senses to get between its light and thine, that thus the twain may blend in one. And having learned thine own Ajnana, flee from the hall of learning. This hall is dangerous in its perfidious beauty, is needed but for thy probation. Beware, Lanu, lest dazzled by elusive radiance, thy soul should linger and be caught in its deceptive light. This light shines from the jewel of the once again. Once again, the title of this morning's talk is Aphorisms on Spiritual Progress. And I now return you back to today's host. Thank you.
In approaching this subject of aphorisms on spiritual progress, it seems a good idea to begin with what do we mean by an aphorism and how does it relate to similar words? So an aphorism then is a concise observation that contains a truth or a scientific fact. And that's a little bit different than what we might call an axiom, which is a proposition that has been accepted. And it's usually also self-evident. So it can be proven to oneself. And then we have a third idea called a precept. And a precept is a general rule intended to regulate our behavior and thought. So although these are a little distinct variations, when we are approaching the subject of aphorisms on spiritual progress, they're actually going to include all these ideas, because indeed they're going to be concise statements based on truths, but also that they're self-evident. And so no one has to accept them on blind faith. One is encouraged to check, test, and verify them for themselves. And if they seem to be true, then to apply them. So in that sense, they are also precepts when understood and accepted, can help us guide our own thought and behavior. Now, even though we are presenting and considering aphorisms on spiritual progress, that does not mean that everybody will benefit from them, or there might be degrees of benefit to the extent that we're willing to listen, apply, and that will determine the benefit we have. So that ability or that readiness to listen, apply, and benefit from these aphorisms is in direct proportion to the amount of sincerity we feel within ourselves. This is a matter of self-recognition, that these are ideas that I want to know, and the seriousness by which we approach them. There's a little story about Socrates. He was wandering along, and a young man came up to him, and he said, "Oh, Socrates, will you be my teacher?" And he said to the young man, he says, "When you desire wisdom as much as a drowning man desires to reach the air, then come back to me, and I will teach you." So it's the idea that this is not so much a hobby or something that we take up now and then, but it has to be something that we seriously and sincerely want to achieve. And also it depends on the perseverance. It's something that we got to keep trying, even though it might be very difficult and we fail, but to keep at it. And most importantly, it depends on the motive, whether we're doing it for our own self-advancement, our own spiritual advancement, or whether we're doing it for the benefit of all. So we want to keep these ideas in mind. Now, these aphorisms on spiritual progress, like everything else presented in the philosophy, have their foundation on certain universal ideas, which we call the three fundamental propositions. And the first one, as you may recall, has to do with the idea of deity. Deity being a boundless, eternal principle, not an outside being that has created this universe and all the beings in it. So one of these ideas related to deity, it is continuously in motion. It's sometimes called the great breath. And the idea is that it does not create, but periodically, the universe and all the worlds and being come forth from within it, manifested, if we want to use that term, and periodically they return to it. And so there is a constant unfoldment from within this divine principle, and the universe comes forth. But in any particular manifestation is only a partial expression of the infinite potentiality within that principle. So the most we can understand, and in fact evolve within that period of manifestation, is determined by the materials we have to work with, the perceptions we have. So in fact, progress of any kind, evolution of any kind, is only relative to a particular period. We speak of the perfectibility of nature and ourselves, not that we reach any ultimate and final perfection, but it is a process. And then we come to this idea of law, the law of karma, and of course, cycles and reincarnation. And the main idea here is that everything good that we achieve, any progress we make as human beings, is the result of our inner character. But that character is also the result, the effect of a long chain of causes, not only set up in this life, but in previous lives. And so to the future character that we have and the progress we make will depend on the causes we set up now. The other idea connected with law is that we are interconnected. And karma, cause and effect, not only affects one individual, but all beings. And so no human being can rise superior to their individual failings. No human being can make progress mentally, psychically, or spiritually without in some degree lifting up the whole body of nature of which they're a part, lifting up humanity to a certain degree. And the third idea has to do with evolution. And no matter where we look at the different adaptations in nature that we see throughout nature, even on the physical plane, not just the mental and spiritual, but a continuous progressive march towards a higher state. This is the work of nature. And so as co-workers of nature, we too can make that step-by-step progress. And doing so, being a co-worker with nature in that effort, nature will help us. It's sort of like working with the cycle, working with the wave, working with the tide of life. So having said that, we can begin to approach these aphorisms. And what we're going to do is read and comment briefly on some of these comments, some of these aphorisms, plant some seeds that we can certainly talk about and question later on. But the first aphorisms that we want to speak of are those that give us kind of a warning, prepare us for the journey. And so the first one we're going to read is from The Voice of the Silence, and we'll give the pages here in case you want to study them yourselves later. The Voice of the Silence, page 16. And it tells us, there is but one road to the path. At its very end alone, the voice of the silence can be heard. The ladder by which the candidate ascends is formed of rungs of suffering and pain. These can be silenced only by the verse, the voice of virtue. So the warning here is this is a process of evolution. It's spiritually, it's not going to be easy. It's going to develop, it'll be painful in times, it'll be a struggle. It's sort of like a growth pain, reinventing ourselves, giving birth to ourselves in a new way. And it's going to accompany some struggles and pain. And the only way we'll be able to get past it is to apply certain virtues, which we'll get into. But even though it's going to be difficult, we have this aphorism given to us also in The Voice of the Silence, page 68. Remember thou that fightest for man's liberation. Each failure is success, and each sincere attempt wins its reward in time. The holy germs that sprout and grow unseen in the disciple's soul, their stalks wax strong at each new trial. They bend like reeds, but never break, nor can they e'er be lost. But when the hour has struck, they blossom forth. So having given us the warning that this is going to be difficult, it also gives us the hope based on this law of karma that if we are truly working for the benefit of all, not just ourselves, every effort we make, every sincere attempt, even if we don't reach that perfectibility and performance and have to struggle with it and try it again every time, even when we fail, the effort has its effect, and it becomes sort of like a seed that germinates in our nature. And we may not see the full impact of that progress in our lives, but the seed has been planted, and it will come forth, it will blossom in the future. And why is it difficult? Why the pain and the struggle? Because it is our personality that it gets in the way, and we're trying to let it go, and it's not an easy thing. There are many attachments we have to our personal lives and all the thoughts and feelings that go with it. So we have this little aphorism from The Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, page 638. And it goes, "For with every effort of will towards purification and unity with that self God, one of the lower rays breaks, and the spiritual entity of man is drawn higher and higher to the ray that supersedes the first, until from ray to ray, the inner man is drawn into that one and highest beam of that parent. So it is a step-by-step process, depending on the exertion of our will. And as we know, when we climb the stairs, there's a certain amount of resistance and weight we have to lift. But if we keep at it, what happens? We get stronger and the load gets lighter and the goal becomes more attainable. So it's the same here. So these aphorisms that we are going to look at, there are so many, but we're going to select a few. And we even have an aphorism from Isis Unveiled, Volume 1, 39, that sort of helps us figure out which are the most important ones for us to begin with. And this goes, to become a genuine spiritual entity, which designation man implies, man must first create himself anew, so to speak. Thoroughly eliminate from his mind and spirit not only the dominating influence of selfishness and other impurity, but also the infection of superstition and prejudice. So this spiritual journey to become a true human being, to gain a truer realization of the self and a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood, we have to remake ourselves, recreate ourselves. And we do that first by weeding out the influence of selfishness and other impurities in our heart and mind. And so the aphorisms that we are going to highlight today are going to give us some practical means to do that. So we spoke before about the idea that we need to practice certain virtues in order to make the progress, to overcome the difficulties in our way. But even before that, there's one thing that we need to address. And this aphorism is found in the Voice of the Silence, page 36. To live to benefit mankind is the first step. To practice the six glorious virtues is the second. So the glorious virtues have to do with the purification of our heart and mind, as we'll see. But even before that, we have to commit ourselves to do it for the benefit of mankind, not for our own spiritual progress, because these virtues can be pursued by those who just seek their own spiritual perfection, their own glorious spiritual development, which from a certain perspective is limiting. It's still a self-centered attempt. So what are some of the things we need to understand in terms of developing this mind, this instrument we have? So we have here a aphorism also from the Voice of the Silence, page 2. And it goes like this: the mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. And the first thing this is teaching us is we are not our minds, in the sense those collections of ideas, thoughts, attitudes that we have. We are not the faculties of mind, but rather we are the thinker, the observer, that looks directly on these things. And so not being those things, we can change our mind. And we can see that our mind is a great slayer of the real, because in a sense, looking as perceivers, looking through the prism or the glasses of our mind or our ideas, it sort of tints, discolors, distorts what we perceive in the world around us. We know if we put on red filtered glasses, everything looks red. Well, if we perceive the world just through certain ideas, prejudices, superstitions, opinions of others, even our own ideas, but that's going to affect our outlook and the way we act. So we have to be willing to change those ideas, and we can change those ideas if necessary. The next idea in terms of this development of mind, because we're told that we want to be able to see clearly and not through the distorted lens of our individual ideas. But in order to do that, something has to be acquired in our nature. And this is covered in the Voice of the Silence, this axiom on page 2. And it says, before the soul can see, the harmony within must be attained, and fleshly eyes be rendered blind to all illusion. So what is this harmony within, and what throws it off? Well, this aphorism tells us that it is the illusions of our senses, the impressions we get in our mind, that we are separate human beings, that we are separate from other beings, we are separate from the world, and in a sense, we feel even separate from that divine essence. The perceptions of our senses give us very limited notions, and consequently, our desires are out of harmony with the benefit of all. Even the thoughts we have influenced by those senses are out of harmony with all. So in spite of the ideas, the sensations, in spite of the sensations that come through our senses, because we need that, we need to be able to contact physical life through our senses. In spite of that, we have to adopt certain desires, certain attitudes, certain universal thoughts that will keep us in harmony with all. And if we begin to do that, eventually we will no longer see through those distorted lenses, but to begin to see life as it really is, to begin to see ourselves as it really is. So it is this personality, the personality, the collection, the bundle of ideas that we have about who and what we are, the limited perspective we have of ourselves that gets in the way of our true understanding. So here's an aphorism also from the Voice of the Silence, page 13. Ere the soul's mind can understand, the bud of personality must be crushed out, the worm of sense destroyed past resurrection. So once again, it's pointing us in the direction of what we need to do to gain a truer realization of ourself, a profounder conviction of our unity and interdependence. We need to recognize this personality, personal idea for what it is, limiting, and not allow it to get in the way of how we're going to think and feel, to put it aside. And therefore, we have to, while perceiving through the senses, not let them distort the way we think and feel, because we are continuously deluded by our senses. This is a scientific fact that everyone, in a sense, can understand. So we have this aphorism, and we can understand it. It's from the Voice of the Silence, page 54, and it says, thou shalt not let thy senses make a playground of thy mind. Well, there's a very clear image of how our minds are played with by the senses. We may have a certain conviction or something we want to do, and a sense of the sensation of certain difficulties or harsh environments or hearing harsh words may throw our minds off, may even create some doubts in our mind. So once again, pointing to the importance of not being aware of our sensations, but being watchful of our thoughts that we have. So besides this effort to control the lens, the personality, what can we do with our minds to get it in the right direction? And so there's this idea that the mind is like a mirror. It gathers dust while it reflects. It needs the gentle breezes of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusions. That's another aphorism from the voice. And it tells us that we have to learn to direct our mind in another direction. And so the mind is sort of like a vase, a clear vase that takes the appearance of the water that's put in it, what it holds. And so if we fill the mind with higher ideas, higher perspectives, it will identify with that and become more like that. It will reflect that. So it says here, it gives us this image. Before the soul can comprehend and may remember, she must unto the silent speaker be united, just as the form to which the clay is modeled is first united with the potter's mind, from the Voice of the Silence, page 3. So just think of that image of trying to create a piece of a pottery. Before it's physically presented, created, in the mind, we have to have an image of it and unite our mind with it. And having identified it in our imagination, a strong conception of what it is, now we can create it on the physical plane. Now we can manifest it. So we need to hold in our minds an ideal to identify with of what we want to become. And this could be the image of a noble example of a human life, some human being who exemplifies those qualities that we truly admire and emulate, but to direct our minds to what we consider to be, for us, the ideal of human perfectibility. And keeping that in mind, then we try to use that to guide the way we fashion our own desires and thoughts, to try to emulate. And finally, we're going to present this idea, a very useful aphorism on the purification of the heart and mind. And that is also from the Voice of the Silence, page 19. The pupil must regain the child state he has lost, ere the first sound can fall upon his ear. And so the idea here is not that we become childish, but childlike. And we hear this expression that one who pursues the path of spiritual progress is as one reborn or born again. And in ancient times, the initiates and adepts were called the babes, because there was a rebirth in their nature. So what is the childlike state that we have lost? Well, if we observe children at a young age, or maybe even if we have glimpses and recollections of how we were when we were children, we know there is a natural trust, a natural devotion, a natural feeling of harmony with nature, a natural courage. In spite of falling down, the courage to get up again and keep trying, a natural curiosity to learn and try new things, to approach other people as they were ourselves. We don't have those clear yet identifications that this is mine and that's theirs, or this is my family and that's their families. There's an openness of perspective. And it's only over time, as we have more contact with the world, that those things tend to get limited and crowded out. And we begin to develop a more concrete, limited sense of who and what we are. And so that devotion, that courage, that trust, that identity becomes limited. And so the previous perspective is lost. So what we need to do is, we've had all that experience of learning, but now we have to go back and, based on that knowledge now, that wisdom, that learning, go back and regain those qualities. Because before we had them out of ignorance and innocence. Now we want to achieve them again because we realize through our own experience that there is true value in that attitude, in spite of all the knocks of life. There is a truth there that we want to achieve. So there, of course, there are a number of other aphorisms on spiritual progress, and we can certainly talk about some more, and you may have some of your own favorites, but we sort of just wanted to lay out there this idea and finish again with a repetition of what was said before, because it's probably the most important aphorism for us to take away. And that is, once again, remember thou that fightest for man's liberation. Each failure is success, and each sincere attempt wins its reward in time. So at this point, we'd like to open the meeting to your questions and comments on those truths that you've not only read and learned from other sources, but you have found yourself to be valuable and true and most practical in your life. So we have a hand at Theosophy Hall.
Yes, we have a comment here.
Question?
Yes.
The aphorism about slaying the slayer, and also the saying attributed to the one known as Jesus, the teacher Jesus, the Christ, that the kingdom of heaven is taken by violence. What is that directed as? Is that outward, inward? We were just wondering, because they're images of violence, in a sense.
These are just different ways of expressing at different times to different people that basic aphorism, that the path of spiritual progress for a human being is one of struggle and difficulty, and in a sense is a battle, not so much directed outwardly, but a battle with those ideas and feelings and attitudes that we've acquired in life that get in the way of the victory that we want to achieve. And that victory is mastery and self-control over the mind and the heart, not in itself, but that it becomes a better instrument to our true spiritual nature and a better instrument for realizing our unity with all of life. And so whether we talk about the battle in the Bhagavad Gita, or the kingdom of heaven is taken by violence, or so forth, and even in the Old Testament, there are many wanderings and battles that the Israelites had to fight in the desert, in the wilderness, before they entered the symbolic land of milk and honey. It all goes back to that same idea that this is a journey that's difficult but worthy of the true ego, which is, in that sense, a warrior soul. Christian tells us, fortune's favored soldiers. It is a battle that only fortune's favored soldiers may obtain. We are brought to this life with this realization because we have been on this path before. And perhaps there were enemies that in our nature that we slew in the past life, and now they are no longer obstacles, but we are have to achieve new levels of realization. So we do, okay, we have a chat, but go ahead, Theosophy Hall.
We have another comment here, Theosophy Hall. Sure.
The one aphorism uses a metaphor that refers to the mind as like a mirror. We would like to investigate what the substance of the dust is. Mm-hmm. And what is this breeze, and what might the breeze be?
Did you hear?
Yes, we'll try to repeat it. It brings in mind the aphorism from The Voice of the Silence. The mind is like a mirror. It gathers dust while it reflects. It needs the gentle breezes of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusions, which reminds us, you'll find aphorisms that you'll soon learn by heart because they have a special meaning to you, and you'll just know them. They'll just become part of your mental furniture, and that's one of them. Because why is it? What is? And we think if these are aphorisms that are self-evident, certainly there are other ideas other participants might have. Is what constitutes the dust that reflects or gathers on the mirror of our mind? What would you say that dust represents? Yes, the Theosophy Hall.
Yes, we would think that dust is like our delusions, our attachments to our senses, materialism, anything that diverts us, distracts us from concentrating on our higher nature.
Yeah, so it's the dust of our illusions, and that primary illusion being the illusion of separateness. So as pointed out, any dust, conclusion, attitude, tendency, desire we have that is fed and nourished by that illusion of separateness is a dust that adheres to the lens of our mind. So that's there. And now we got to brush it away. But before we get to that, WW, you had your hand up. Did you want?
Yes, my comment was going to be very similar. I was going to say that the dust would be our experiences. But you all provided a more elaborate expression of what I was going to say. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And life is like that. We wonder, well, why is it? Why do we have to have these? What's the purpose? If we're going to brush it off, ultimately, anyway, why have to accumulate it to begin with? And this all relates to the process of evolution of the soul. We only get to know ourselves and the interconnectedness we have with all of life by getting involved in it. And that means getting involved with the lowest aspects and lowest forms of our existence, this physical world. And in doing so, and the use of our senses to the degree that we've lost, we have not brought with us from previous lives that wisdom, to that degree in ignorance, we're going to identify with and accumulate the dust. But that's okay, because we not only brush off the dust, but we refine the materials with which we work, the body and the nature. So then in the next period of evolution, it will become a better instrument for us to proceed. So, what are the gentle breezes of soul wisdom that will brush them away? Because you know, dust can be very difficult to get rid of. So what would you say in your experiences would represent those breezes? Yes, hand at Theosophy Hall.
Yes, we have a comment.
Well, it's hard to say, but probably will has something to do with it.
Will has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is we have a breeze here, a motion, a wind, but it's a gentle wind. It's not a forceful, it's not a torrent, it's not a hurricane, tornado, but it's a gentle, steady effort to remove those that dust through the exertion of our will, through the exertion of spirit in action, or another way of saying it, through the exertion of making theosophy practical in our everyday lives through the exertion of our will. So it's not just a matter of studying these ideas intellectually, but once we find them to be true, to put them into motion, to create a breeze out of them that will permeate our minds and our hearts, and eventually, because gentle, brush away. And we emphasize the gentleness because of that law of reaction and interaction and action and reaction. And we know that the harder we push at something, the more will be the rebound, the reaction. And in the same way, it is much better to give a slow, gentle, steady, persistent effort than to try to accomplish it all in a very brief time. The reaction on our nature can be quite extreme to us because we're not prepared. It's sort of like, you know, we got all excited on January 2nd that we want to go to the gym and work out and twist a knee or strain our back because we didn't approach it intelligently. So we have to prepare ourselves. WW, we did see your hand go up there.
I'll pass. Thank you, SL.
Okay. There was another. Theosophy Hall, did you have a...
But the funny thing is, in regards to the dust on the mirrors, that even after we clean it off, it comes back. So, I mean, how do we work with that? Is that it keeps coming back.
Getting back to that idea, how let the mind is the great slayer of the real, let the disciple slay the slayer. And that sort of gets to this idea in the chat, how does the disciple slay the slayer? The mind that reflects, the mind that allows itself to be tainted or dusted by these illusions is the lower mind. It's the instrument. It's the great slayer of the real. It's the pair of glasses that we put on. And what do we do with those glasses when they get too foggy or dirty? Well, we take something and we have to exert some gentle force, otherwise we'll scratch the glasses and remove the dust. That does not mean that they won't become dusty again, but we realize that they're the instrument, they're the glasses. And if we want to see and use them, we as the thinkers, the observers, have to clean them. So that's part of the discipline. That's part of the exercise. That's necessary for the progress spiritually. But what is making the progress is not the instrument. It's the being who's using the instrument and is constantly retuning it when it gets out of sync. And even the greatest musicians, master violinists and pianists, begin their concerts by retuning the instrument, the strings. The greatest conductors tune the orchestra to a keynote before beginning the masterpiece. And this is something we have to do with our own lives as well. The idea before was by concentrating it, bringing it back to the self, bringing it back to a few truths, bringing it back to divine wisdom, wherever we find it. Theosophy can be found in all sorts of sources because it's universal wisdom down through the ages. WW, let me see your hand up.
Yes, thank you. So in responding to the question regarding the dust and the reemergence of the dust continually on the mirror, I had a thought, and I would say that managing our expectations. So as theosophists, we know that And we expect that there will be the dust, which are the trials and the tribulations that seek to help us to perfect the soul. So if we know that this is going to be a continual struggle for us, our task that ultimately seeks to purify our soul to help us to get to that level of evolution that we're supposed to be. So we kind of keep that mindset that even though we might be able to successfully wipe away the dust from the mind, at some point that dust will reemerge and we just have to wipe away that dust from the mind again. So it's kind of like what you have been saying, the general theme throughout today's meeting, SL, which is preparation, being prepared, knowing the facts, the truths about life as we perceive it, that it's a life filled with trials, tribulations, challenges, but they all seek a greater purpose of kind of preparing us for the task at hand. It's like I have a saying that I would say that it was really not mine, that iron is purified through the fire. So the fire there is those trials and tribulations, but it seeks the purpose of purification.
Yes, that's very useful as an aphorism in itself. And there are aphorisms that express that very idea. But the trials and tribulations, the dust, it's all part of our learning. We learn by contrast. We would not know day without night or light without darkness or cold without heat. We need comparison to gain a truer realization of what the self is, a truer realization of what brotherhood is versus not brotherhood. And so here's an aphorism from the Voice of the Silence that will help us gain a better, maybe a more instructive, beneficial approach to this dust. And it says, search for the paths, but O Lanu, that's a disciple, be of clean heart before thou startest on thy journey. Before thou takest thy first step, learn to discern the real from the false, the ever fleeting from the everlasting. Learn above to separate head learning from soul wisdom, the eye from the heart doctrine. And to go on with this, in the Secret Doctrine, Volume 2, page 516, HPB gives us this aphorism regarding the truth. The whole essence of truth cannot be transmitted from mouth to ear. You can't hear it in a lecture. Nor can any pen describe it, not even that of the recording angel. So it's not something we can read in a book. Unless man finds the answer in the search, in the sanctuary of his own heart, in the innermost depths of his divine intuition. And that's the difference between the eye doctrine and the heart doctrine. The eye is trying to find truth and wisdom from outside ourselves, from what we hear other people say, or what we read from what other people write, rather than to searching for it within and getting it through our own divine intuition and perspective. And that is what experience is for. People who, whether we have worldly wisdom or spiritual wisdom, it's the result of experience, of contrast, of learning what is real, what is false, what is good, what is useless. And having learned that, as it says, flee from my own anjana. Flee from my own ignorance. Any other questions or comments or ideas on this? If you had to come up with your own aphorism, something that was short and sweet, that was a truth that you could apply, that you understood within your own nature, that even though you may not be perfect in its expression, it's something that you've taken away from your studies, from your experience, that you can depend on and use as an aphorism in your everyday life. What would it be for you? And even if you don't have a way of answering that right now, that's not the point of the question. It's to plant the seed of thought that if we are to become our own inner rulers, our own inner guide, we have to build up a reservoir of those kinds of truths and convictions that make ourselves our own authority and guide. Except the adept becomes, he is not made or she is not made. We become through the expression, the unfolding of the truths we recognize in our own nature. And we'll finish up with your question or comment, W.W.
Yes. Real quickly, so an aphorism that I would find goes back to the one that I just said not too long ago, which is iron is purified through the fire. That's something that I absolutely believe. Whenever I engage in conversations with my friends or peers and they're going through a difficult time, that is something that I would remind them, and then I would explain exactly what that means, which is in alignment with theosophical views and thoughts.
Very much like that aphorism in the voice, which refers to out of the furnace of a man's life, winged flames arise. So we need that furnace to liberate ourselves and rise to a higher state of purification. So at this point, we'd like to thank you for participating and welcome you to our next meeting this Wednesday on reincarnation. Does the lack of memory disprove? Our meeting is adjourned.